Hello, and welcome to the Green Book Commentaries Podcast. I'm Dr. Arthur Plessa. Volume 14, Episode 37, Chiropractic Majors and Minors. Doctors of Chiropractic and Student Initiates, welcome back. Today, we have got an exciting episode to share. So, over the last set of podcasts, we have been learning a lot about various cellular functions and what happens to those cells when a subluxation is present. We focused on paralysis, thermogenesis, nutritive function, etc. Today, we are going to discuss the practical aspect of all this accumulative knowledge. How to find the subluxation that's causing all this dis-ease. So, let's begin. The science of finding a vertebral subluxation is called chiropractic analysis. Stevenson defines this specifically as, quote, the process of finding which subluxation or subluxations to adjust according to major methods, end quote. Today, chiropractors use a variety of analyses to find subluxations, such as static and motion palpation, checking range of motion for restrictions, leg checks, spinal thermography, x-ray, just to name a few. Each analysis provides a window into subluxation, giving the chiropractor valuable information into the cause of a patient's condition. Similar to modern times, the chiropractors of the past utilized spinal analysis to target subluxations. The major methods, taught at the Palmer School of Chiropractic, included nerve tracing, taut and tender fibers, spinal graph, Merrick system, equations, and neurokilometer. For those new to some of these analyses, let's take a few minutes to briefly review. Nerve tracing was developed by B.J. Palmer in the early 1900s. This method involved the chiropractor palpating nerves from the affected area and tracing them back to their respective exit points at the intervertebral foramina. In one of the early chiropractic green books, BJ illustrates this art of nerve tracing. The picture has BJ palpating a nerve from the patient's arm and tracing it back to the spine. What makes this interesting is the anatomical artwork that BJ included, where he penned on the patient's skin the pathway for the affected nerve. While done purely for illustrative purposes, BJ showcases his intimate knowledge of the nervous system with this art, as well as his uncanny palpation skill. Next, we have the analysis of taut and tender fibers. This was a palpation-based skill, where the chiropractor palpated the paraspinal area for taut or tightened muscles, as well as tender spots in the soft tissue. This is one of the most common analyses still in use by chiropractors today. Gonstead practitioners will recall this in their 5-point analysis for subluxation. Did you know that Gonstead, a 1923 Palmer grad, was taught this method by B.J. Palmer? Spinographs was the term coined by B.J. Palmer for an x-ray of the spine. Introduced to the profession in 1910, B.J. would become the first person to x-ray the spine for a vertebral subluxation. This technology allowed chiropractors to see the subluxations that they were palpating. It would soon become apparent that spinography was actually more reliable than palpation for a subluxation. This was due to two major factors. One, palpation is an artful skill requiring months to years of practice on hundreds of spines. However, it was and still is common that two master palpators can find two separate subluxations in the same spine. So this is definitely a significant variable to consider if using palpation alone. Two, genetic malformations. From axis downwards, each vertebra has identical structures, only varying in size, such as a body, two transverse processes, two laminae, facets, and a spinous process. However, genetics can cause malformations in those structures, which can lead to an erroneous subluxation listing, if not taken into consideration. For example, the lamina may be hypertrophied unilaterally, giving the spinous process an appearance of being rotated, when in fact, the vertebra is not subluxated. Now we move into the Merrick system analysis. Developed originally in 1906, Merrick system used patient symptomatology to identify the spinal area where the subluxation was located. For example, a patient with stomach problems, like acid reflux, would have the chiropractor check the thoracic spine for a subluxation somewhere around T6. This analysis was the first major advancement in subluxation detection, departing from the first decade of adjust every vertebra that palpated as out of place. Merrick system would become the most popular analysis during Palmer's full spine years. Chiropractic equations was an attempt to quantify the various subluxations and their effects into a mathematical formula. It can be likened to an algorithm, so that if this subluxation with this specific effect was manifested, then the chiropractor would know likely which segment to adjust. The final method to find a subluxation that was developed by B.J. Palmer was instrumentation. This term was used to signify the usage of technology to find a subluxation. Similar to X-ray technology, instrumentation does what the human hand cannot. The first chiropractic instrument was called the neurokilometer, or NCM for short. The NCM was a handheld device to measure paraspinal skin temperature. This technology was built upon the idea of the chiropractic hot box. No, Cheech and Chong, not that kind of hot box. This hot box was caused by a subluxation hot nerve, which innervated paraspinal skin temperature on one side. Chiropractors used their hands to palpate the heated area of the spine, and when found, adjusted the corresponding vertebra. As in palpation skill, feeling for hot boxes required an experienced chiropractor. So, to overcome this variable, the neurokilometer was invented in 1923 and introduced into chiropractic in 1924. It accurately measured hot boxes, now called heat breaks, to let the chiropractor know where the subluxation was actually located. Now that we have our historical background on chiropractic analysis, let's discuss adjusting. To adjust a subluxation is productive for restoring patient health. To not adjust a subluxation, obviously, is bad for that patient's health. These two statements all subluxation-based chiropractors can agree upon. However, what about the space between? If you find multiple subluxations, is it good to adjust all of them? If you find only one subluxation, is it good to adjust it repeatedly? Here's BJ's findings that will help you in practice. If you find multiple subluxations and adjust them all, oftentimes you'll see the patient get worse. In similar manner, if you only find one subluxation and adjust it repeatedly, the patient's condition will also worsen. But why? BJ wrote that each condition requires a specific amount of material available within the body to rebuild the affected structure caused by subluxation. So if you adjust multiple subluxations, you're actually putting a demand on innate intelligence to restore more structures than there are materials in the body available to pull from. It's like asking a builder to restore a house destroyed by fire. This builder requires a total of 100 bricks, but only gets 10 bricks to use per day. Better to focus those 10 bricks on one room rather than spreading supplies thin throughout the whole house. Now, as for adjusting one subluxation repeatedly, this will also limit innate's ability to rebuild and restore. The principle here is that innate healing occurs in the time between adjustments. The adjustment sets into motion this process. So repeatedly adjusting is to reset this natural process and often making the patient worse. This raises the question of when do I adjust a patient and when do I not adjust? We now move into the topic of majors and minors. A major is the subluxation or subluxations causing the major condition. This is the cause of dis-ease, also known as the effects or condition. A major subluxation will cause a major condition, which is the condition most detrimental to a patient's health. A patient can only have one major at a time. Now, as for minor subluxations, these are the cause of minor conditions. Minor conditions are considered less detrimental to a patient's immediate health. Also, unlike majors, there can be multiple minor subluxations. Now, let's articulate this together and see how to decide which subluxation is the major and which is the minor. A patient presents to your office with symptoms of appendicitis. He is complaining of right lower quadrant pain, nausea, and has already vomited twice today. Patient history revealed chronic hypertension and tension headaches. Out of the three conditions mentioned, appendicitis, hypertension, and tension headaches, which one is the most concerning to the patient's immediate health? If you picked appendicitis, then you've likely passed visceral diagnosis class, making you correct. So, with appendicitis being the major condition, where could we expect to find the major subluxation or subluxations causing this dis-ease? If you're a chiropractic student on campus now, you'll find your answer on the autonomic nervous system chart hanging on the wall in your student or outpatient clinic. For those skipping class today to listen to the podcast instead, I'll throw you a bone, or in this specific case, a few vertebrae. The appendix is innervated by spinal nerves exiting between T8 through T11. However, the upper cervical spine also innervates the appendix via the vagus nerve. This throws atlas and axis into the possible areas of being one of the major subluxations. Now that we have used the Merrick system to identify the spinal areas where the subluxation or subluxations can be, we need to determine which segment or segments need to be adjusted. Let's use the available analyses from 1926, when volume 14 was published, and see what we find. First, we begin with static palpation of the upper cervical area, followed by T8 through T11. Using this analysis, we find taut and tender fibers along the left paraspinal muscles between atlas and axis. This is a soft tissue indicator that there is a subluxation of either atlas or axis. Second, we perform static palpation from T8 to T11. Doing so, we find more taut and tender fibers along the right paraspinal muscles from T8 to L1. This serves as a soft tissue indicator for a possible subluxation in this area. Third, we use a neurokilometer checking bilateral paraspinal skin temperature. A significant temperature differential is revealed at axis and another at T9. This test indicates nerve pressure and nerve flow interference at these segments. Last, we take a spinograph of the cervical and thoracic spine. This accurately reveals the direction of misalignment. After taking spinographs for decades on all patients, B.J. Palmer discovered that subluxations are not mere fixations of the facet joints, but rather a directional misalignment that is locked out of normal range of motion. This means that the subluxated vertebra will shift either right or left, lateralizing. Thoracic subluxations will also shift posterior. Atlas subluxations can also subluxate anterior and superior, or posterior and inferior. With this knowledge, BJ demonstrated the clinical necessity for X-ray to ascertain subluxation direction, what is called a subluxation listing. We now analyze this patient's spinograph and find a subluxation of axis with a listing of PLI, and another subluxation of T9 with a subluxation listing of PRI. With this analysis, we adjust the patient. Moments later, the patient's symptoms begin to subside. The sharp pain in the right lower quadrant lessens. The feeling of nausea subsides. Now, when do we adjust the patient again? As of 1926, we would have the patient come back daily to get checked with palpation and the neurokilometer. If done correctly, and the appendicitis is not beyond the point of no return, the patient will get well. I've personally seen much success with appendicitis in my practice. Correcting the subluxation allows NA to restore normal nerve supply to the appendix, which in turn restores normal function to the appendix. While we help these patients on the front end, what did we really do for them on the back end? These patients were saved from a possible rupture of the appendix, likely costing them their life. These same patients were saved from an appendectomy surgery, costing them the immunity provided by the appendix to the digestive system, likely causing digestive health conditions further down the line. You see, when we adjust a subluxation, we don't just restore health. We also prevent future health conditions from ever taking root. And that's something you can't put a price on. We now begin our reading from volume 14, page 224. Article 296, Analysis. Chiropractic analysis is the process of finding which subluxation or subluxations to adjust according to major methods, the classification of effects with the view of finding the cause, or finding the cause without the formality of classification of effects. Methods: the art of using palpation, nerve tracing, taut and tender fibers, spinograph, Merrick system, equations, and the neurokilometer. Since the use of the NCM has an art and a technique all its own and is taken care of by another department, we will have to leave this very direct method and explain the older roundabout method, which chiropractic has used for many years. Article 297, The Philosophy of Major Work. Major methods is the concentration of the material resources of the body on one abnormal condition at a time. Shotgun adjusting lowers the constructive survival value in the body. It has long been observed clinically that adjusting too many subluxations or adjusting too often makes the patient very weak, and if carried to excess, is very harmful. The reparation required in getting well is just as exhaustive as any other form of extreme adaptation, as getting acclimated, spring fever, extreme physical exertions, extreme mental work, mental shock, worry, and the like. It is not a question of forces. NA can get plenty of them to supply the body in general. It is not a question of scattering innate forces, but a scattering of reparatory materials to too many places, calling upon all well tissue cells, which are in the business of rendering reparatory service, tiring them and using the available materials which they have on hand, and not giving them sufficient time to prepare more. By adjusting one local and its attendant conditions, the material resources of the body can be directed to one place at a time, and this will be no great drain upon reparatory function. The other subluxations, which are the causes of less severe incoordinations, can wait until the major condition is well cleared, and then the worst of them can be attended to next. In this way, the reparatory organs have sufficient time to prepare reparatory materials. Time is given to bring into the body new food materials, digest them, prepare them, and use them. If this is not done, the extreme adaptation will cause innate to deprive other cells of the body, which are in no way connected with the disorder of their constructive values. Make them give up some of the things which they have and which they should retain to make up a relief for the sufferers. This weakens and depletes all body cells, and therefore the whole body. This must be restored. The appetite of a convalescent is well known. Sometimes, this extreme use of constructive values and terrific appetite is observed in growing children. Article 298, Major Condition. The major condition of a case is that which is most vital to the health or life of the patient. It has reference to effects which usually are indicated by the symptoms of dis-ease. It is the effects of a cause or causes, a subluxation or subluxations. A case can have only one major condition at a time. Article 299, Major. A major is the subluxation or subluxations causing the major condition. It refers to the cause of the effects, the cause of dis-ease. A case can have only one major at a time. A major which usually has both local and condition has one or more subluxations, usually one for the local and one or more for condition. Article 300, Minor Condition. A minor condition of a case is an abnormal condition which is not so vital to the health or life of the patient as the major condition. When the major condition has been restored to normal, the worst minor condition becomes major automatically. A case can have more than one minor condition at a time. A minor condition is not adaptive, compensatory, to a major condition, though it may be aggravated by the major condition. A minor condition has its own causes in the spine, and adjusting the major does not remove the minor. Article 301, Minors. A minor is the subluxation or subluxations causing the minor condition. It refers to the cause or causes of effects, the cause or causes of dis-ease. A case can have more than one minor at a time. A minor also has local and condition, and therefore has one or more subluxations. One for local, usually, and one or more for condition. Article 302, The Factors of Majors and Minors. A major has direct and indirect effects. The direct effects are due to interference on the local nerve supply. The indirect conditions are generally due to interference with transmission, affecting the serous circulation. Therefore, a major usually has one, two, or more subluxations. Sometimes one subluxation makes both direct and indirect effects. The subluxation causing the direct effect is called local or location. The subluxation or subluxations causing causing the indirect conditions is called condition. A major having local and condition is a combination major and most majors are of that kind. Adaptive or compensatory conditions are indirect and should never be adjusted for directly. Some indirect conditions are caused by indirect impingement, as pressure upon a nerve by tumor, but the cause of the pressure is itself caused by a subluxation in the spine. Article 303, Rules of Major Methods. If the patient is feeling better but getting weaker, he is over-adjusted. If the patient is feeling worse but getting stronger, he is retracing. Never adjust a chronic case oftener than once every 24 hours. The rule of acuteness or chronicity as to time is determined by the palpable hot box in the spine or by the tenderness of taut fibers. The rule of degree of effect is determined by the tenderness of nerves emitting from the subluxation. The rule of area, place of, is ascertained by the use of the Merrick system. The rule of the major and minor subluxations is proven by the equational system. The less you adjust, the oftener you can. The more you adjust, the less you should. That is, if your combination contains three subluxations or more, you should not adjust oftener than every other day, or three times a week, and in some cases only once or twice a week. If your major has only one or two places, then you may adjust every day for a time. If your major has only one or two places, then you may include a minor if it does not have too many subluxations. The location of a headache will determine the inferior zone in which coordination exists. The degree of the headache determines the degree of effect, which determines the degrees or acuteness of incoordination in the inferior zone. Thank you for joining me for another episode. I'm Dr. Arthur Plessa. This has been the Green Book Commentaries Podcast.